California. This is Mostly Music. And now, your hosts, Ignatius Palafox and Lo Spark.
Thank you for joining us once again. This is Mostly Music. We are your hosts, Ignatius Palafox.
I'm the Lo Spark. Welcome back. Or shalom.
Shalom.
What's this?
I don't think, I don't think Dexter Gordon was Jewish, but, you know, who knows? Well, yeah, Sammy Davis Jr. was, right? So, yeah, supposedly.
You're probably better off being Jewish and playing this music. It's a better combination.
This is Dexter Gordon, so, this song is called I Hear Music, so I think it's fitting. And, you know, Dexter's sort of, he's not overlooked, but I think he gets lost in the fray a bit, because he moved to Europe in, like, the 50s or the 60s or something, and was out there until, like, the 80s, but, you know, he had a few comebacks, maybe, like, three, right? So, because he was definitely one of the best tenor saxes coming out of, like, the bop era in the 40s, and he played with everybody, but never really got his own thing going. And then he moved to Europe. Well, at first he got, like, arrested, I'm pretty sure, for, like, heroin or whatever.
Of course.
As was the style back then if you were a jazz musician. But then, yeah, he came back in mid-50s, and I think he did Dexter Blows Hot and Cool, or...
So you went over there for World War II?
No.
So, you know, we get a free ride.
Yeah, a lot of that history is sort of murky. I don't know. I'm sure there's people out there listening that know much more than I do about Dexter Gordon's European travels and traipsing around Europe, doing whatever he wanted to do. But then he came back, I want to say, like, in the 80s, had like a comeback in the States. And then he was in, what movie was that? He was in a movie that he got, like, nominated for an Academy Award, I'm pretty sure.
See, this is... As an actor?
Or yeah.
For music?
Yeah, I mean, I think he did both.
Was he portraying a musician?
See, this is why we need a resident millennial here to...
I should have called Serena, but I forgot.
Yeah, she would be... Round Midnight.
Round Midnight's
yeah,
name.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. We should watch that.
Have I seen that? It sounds familiar.
86, 85, 86.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
Yeah. Yeah, you know. But so he was one of those guys that had, like, a few comebacks, if that counts. But I love Dexter Gordon because he has, like, a lot of, like, those really smoky ballads. Like, when I was younger, that would be, like, what I would put on, you know. Like, if... Because, you know, back when I was young, I didn't know any better. Figure I'll let Dexter do some of the work for me. You know? Usually works. It usually worked. I don't know.
Well, I mean, setting the ambiance for yourself at that age, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Like, my ambiance is very different at 10, 11, 12 years old.
No, I'm not talking...
Oh, okay.
I'm not talking about banging chicks when I'm 10 years old, bro.
Oh, I get what you're saying. I thought you meant creative background. I think my head's not in the gutter.
I remember there was, like, a MTV Behind the Music, and Anthony Kiedis from the Red Hot Chili Peppers was talking about growing up in L.A., and his dad was kind of crazy, and his dad took him to a hooker when he was on his 12th birthday, dude.
Oh, shit.
Just fucked. I mean, that had to have fucked him up, you know. Like,
yeah.
That's pretty intense.
That's, I mean, and I think he wrote in his book that Cher used to babysit him, and they would sleep naked together when he was a little kid.
When he was a little kid.
She's like a hippie, wow. You know. They just slept naked.
See, I mean, yeah.
I'm a fan of that.
Yeah, no, it sounds great. These are the kind of things that seem cool, but then if they actually happen to you, I don't know if that's a good thing or not. But, I mean, that's a little young, but no, that's not what I was talking about. But
setting the ambience.
You know, yeah, we should try to find Round Midnight and watch that movie. Because you always have a movie playing when we do a show, which is usually against my will, but, you know, whatever. It's distracting if it's a good movie.
Yeah.
But
then this is your said Bill Murray's best movie.
This is my favorite Bill Murray movie. This is Wes Anderson and Noah Baumbach's The Life Aquatic. Yeah. And
Life I think Aquatic that's with
probably
Steve
why. Yeah. Steve Zissou. Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately, I don't watch Wes Anderson films anymore.
That isn't, I mean, What does that mean? You're watching one right now, right?
That's the only one I can rewatch.
I mean, this is a masterpiece. This movie's incredible. You can watch this movie countless times, and I think I have. I remember watching this in theaters, and at that point, you know, we were all sort of thorough Wes Anderson fans, just because it was like the mid-2000s, and Royal Tenenbaums had come out, and you know, that was, everybody watched that. But
yeah,
but this was so much zanier.
Do you want to know why I don't watch Wes Anderson movies?
Because it's just movies about white privilege or something. Or
okay, so
which is entirely understandable.
Let's put it in short.
Yeah.
So I was at the bar talking to two film majors. Both of them happen to be black. They're African American. And I'm talking about how much I love Forrest Gump. And they're they're like, what? See,
that's inherently
They're like, racist. No, we don't like Forrest Gump. I'm like, what do you mean? It's a great fucking movie. You guys are film majors. You know Forrest Gump's a good movie. And they're like, no, it's a racist movie. Mm-hmm. And then they're like saying the whole thing about, you know, the white guy is retarded and it's okay because everything he does is going to end up okay because he's white. Mm-hmm. And the black guy, Bubba, equally retarded.
But he doesn't find success until he meets the white guy.
Until he meets the white guy and dies. So they kill off the one black guy that has potentially, they could potentially, and creates the white man's wealth.
Yeah.
So it's like some subversive racism thing going on there. And then I shared my point of view as to why I don't watch Wes Anderson films, because all he does is portray a world of white privilege, and everyone else of color in the film, in almost every scene, is portraying a form of submission or servitude. So
are there, I mean, he rarely even has people of color.
Exactly.
In his
and
films.
If they're servants or, you know, submissive.
Danny Glover and Gene Hackman's calling him Coltrane the whole movie. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So yeah. I got a little tired of seeing this world that he's painting for us.
But don't you want, and wouldn't you prefer directors to only create the world that they know rather than try to recreate something that they don't?
Yeah, but I got bored of it. I mean, visually it's the same thing. Conceptually it's the same thing.
He does have a very,
I mean,
specific style.
The only reason this movie is amazing is because, one, Bill Murray.
Mm-hmm.
Two, the soundtrack.
The soundtrack is great.
Even the guy that did the other soundtrack. There's a soundtrack and there's an off soundtrack.
Sue George,
yeah.
Yeah, all the Bowie covers.
Yeah,
in Portuguese. Yeah, but I mean, Willem Dafoe.
And Willem Dafoe, dude. Yeah. Willem Dafoe kills God. It.
Yeah, and even...
what's her... What, the girl?
Well, yeah, Angelica Houston.
Angelica
awesome.
Houston.
No, Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum.
Sorry, yeah. Because he plays such a douche. He plays like such a prick.
When he hits the dog, so he goes, no, down. This shit's hella funny, dude.
This movie is amazing.
It's an amazing movie. Anyways, so like we were saying, I don't watch Wes Anderson films. I just can't do it.
Yeah, we are currently. But yeah, no, this isn't a league of its own. I think it's also because it was co-written with Noah Baumbach. He's rad.
It's his only film that's made me cry.
It's
the end scene. Oh, well, not only because the end scene
when
they finally find the leopard shark.
Oh, yeah.
And they start playing Sigur Rós.
Jaguar shark.
And
oh yeah, they do play Sigur Rós.
They play Sigur Rós, and it's just like whole this ethereal underwater scene where it's just like finally there's this payoff. There's like a closure.
Because everybody thinks he's crazy.
Yeah, and his best friend's dead.
Yeah, he ate Esteban. Yeah. He ate him. That fucking shark.
He fucking ate him. Yeah, it's just
so well conceived. I think this movie
I saw it in theaters and I cried. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I might have been crying from laughter, but yeah, this came out like what, 2004?
It's
old now. It's old. It's weird. It's crazy. Yeah. I think
I want to get back to what you were playing earlier.
What was that?
Was his name Gordon?
Oh yeah, Dexter Gordon.
Dexter Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
So solo artist. You said saxophonist.
Yeah, tenor.
Tenor saxophone.
Mm-hmm. Came up during like the bop days and sort of did his own thing. You know,
like a.
He even played a little bit with Nat King Cole.
Dizzy Gillespie.
Dizzy played trumpet. Yeah,
that's right. Mm-hmm. Who's the one that played?
Charlie Parker? Sax.
Charlie Parker.
Yeah, he's.
Played sax.
I mean, that's it. That's like cream of the crop right there for bebop. But and that's, you know, that's my favorite kind. I mean, I don't like to say it's favorite this or that, but
you've never seen Miles Electric.
What do you mean?
The documentary.
Have I not seen that documentary?
You've not seen it.
I've watched him. I mean, I've watched the videos of him playing, like when he's got like all those pickups on his trumpet and he's going fucking nuts.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's, I'm surprised you have. You got to sit down and watch that documentary.
Have I not seen it? I feel like I must have seen that in college, but maybe not.
No.
Well, why aren't we watching that right now?
Because I don't have it. Is this distracting you?
No, I'm not really. Well, it will. It might once it starts getting going. But no, it's good. It's distracting you, I think, and so is your phone, I guess. I don't know what's going on over there.
Making arrangements
to get a yeah. Well, we should have. We are guestless once again, but
we don't need a guest today.
You wanted to do an all goth album, but I think,
all goth episode.
I think we need.
I can. Well, you were talking about
episode,
setting the mood.
Excuse me. Yeah.
And I said me setting the mood at a young age was different. It was a little broodier. It was dark.
But I mean, what mood though? What mood are you talking about?
I was setting an artistic mood.
Oh, okay.
You were setting a sexual mood.
Right.
Yeah. No, I have fucked to goth music.
Is it a
playlist?
Is it like a specific kind of girl? A girl who's into that music?
No. If they don't like my music, they're not getting
you.
Fucked.
The music's for you.
Music's for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, in the end, either they know it and they like it, or they're like, oh, shit, what the fuck was that? It's like, yeah.
Okay. So we touched on that idea of the fuck list back in, way back in maybe episode 1 or 2 or something.
I would say top artist on that list would probably be The Cure,
mm-hmm.
which brings us back to the discussion. As I mentioned, The Cure, about, I dropped it. Mm-hmm. Well, I dropped them in the goth category. You're like, no, they're more like 80s pop, and I was like, pop goth,
new wave goth, or...
yeah. But then I also told you that you've obviously never listened to their album Pornography.
Well, I mean, I haven't like studied the album, but
there's three pinnacle albums for The Cure. There's 17 Seconds, Pornography, and the pop / semi-satanic album called Disintegration, which is like known to be their greatest album to everyone. That if you generally like The Cure or you know a lot about them, Disintegration's all their hits. It's all like their singles.
Oh, right.
But not just that, but it's like, you know, they're dark. The lyrics are dark. You listen to it and you're like, they're talking about weird shit, you know.
That's, yeah, okay.
Fear, the most hardcore fans, 17 Seconds is like their best album. But 17. For me, it's Pornography because it's like, it's the gothiest sound they have.
So like Siamese Twins.
Siamese Twins was the song I was playing for you earlier.
Strange Day.
Yes, but here, look. If you listen to the words and listen to like the heavy bass, semi-industrial, really dark, heavy like synth organ.
Which song are you gonna
play? This is gonna play Siamese Twins.
Siamese Twins.
The Pornography album. So yeah, like, you don't get darker than that. Coming from a band, The Cure, where it's like you used to like their dance hits, you know, their kitschy like love songs, you know, their quirky words and things like that.
So this is considered goth?
This would be like, I would put it in the category of pop goth, kind of like, you know, dark wave, cold wave.
Cold wave?
Yeah. That's a new term for that stuff now.
Really?
Yeah.
Who else falls into that?
You could do like the less industrial stuff, like Nine Inch Nails. You can do other bands that do like dance pop plus cold wave, where like Pretty Girls Make Graves, things like that. It's just people are going back and categorizing other bands in different genres now because there's more genres.
Right.
You know.
So they're trying to make like subgenres, well, and everything. Yeah.
Even Duran Duran had a cold wave song, like a dark wave song called I forget what it's called, Silver something. But I played it for a friend of mine one time, and he was like, "What the fuck is that?" I was like, "Duran Duran." He's like, "Duran Duran." So that sounds like semi goth, like really dark, like new wave music. I'm like, "Yeah, it's, you know."
That doesn't normally fall into that category, Duran Duran?
No.
It's more pop.
They're 80s pop, like dance pop kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, a lot of The Cure is like that, though, too. Like you were saying.
The early stuff, like their first few albums. Disintegration was the album that kind of broke them through into the mainstream. Disintegration is an amazing album. But that also was the album that I think deemed them banned by the Christian church. Yeah. And in those days,
that's always a great honor.
In those days, that's an honor. Like in the 80s and 90s, like if you were on this, and I think there was even a TV show called Banned by the Christian Church. And if you were like categorized with that, you've reached like a point like Bauhaus and, you know, Peter Murphy's solo stuff, The Cure, a bunch of other shit, like metal stuff, like hair band shit.
Yeah. If you
know,
like
decline of Western civilization stuff, you know.
That seems to be the ultimate compliment, really. When religious zealots hate your music, that's just like,
oh yeah,
awesome, perfect. Oh, yeah. That's that must mean it's good, basically. Yeah.
Is there anything that you listen to that can fall into this category besides stating the obvious, The Cure?
No.
Nothing moody. Nothing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's okay. Like, do you remember? And this is, you know, this is more like drug music though, like
heroin.
Well, it's sort of everything. Drug. Yeah. Remember that band, Placebo?
Yeah. I hate that fucking band.
I know. I used to hate that band too. And then
band is only known for covering other hits.
Well, they cover some Smiths, but or Morrissey. But no, I mean a lot of that stuff's original. But it's all about drugs, and you know, it was a weird time, like in college, you know, there was like this crazy chick that I knew and she was like super into that shit.
Placebo.
I would just suffer through it. But then
that's
after
like
a
that
while,
Southern California leather wristband fucking
right, yeah,
safety pin fucking bullshit. Yeah,
it's I wouldn't consider that goth.
No, it's not goth. It's its own fucking scene.
Yeah, but it's something. It's like it's that weird drug music kind of thing, but it's somewhat similar. It's more modern. It's like that's like mid 90s as opposed to mid 80s. But yeah, you know, if I heard some of that now, I think I'm more wistful when I hear that music.
You're becoming more like what's his name? the John Peel. You're more accepting.
No. It's again. It came at a time when I was, you know, I was 18. You know, I was in college. Like meeting weird people and stuff, you know, and doing things I probably shouldn't have been doing for the first time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called
anal. And then oh, they're talking about anal.
But, you know, and that was down in Orange County. And so, like, you live in your car down there, you know, everybody does. So,
yeah,
everything that you do it in a car. And when you're in a car, you're playing something. Or
you're fucking, you're drinking, you're doing drugs.
You're listening to something. It sort of creates the soundtrack of your life, which is the only thing I miss about, like, living in a car, basically. And I don't mean literally living in, like, I wasn't homeless.
A lot of your life is in the car.
60% of your life. Yeah, you're either commuting somewhere or from somewhere or whatever, or you can't smoke in your apartment, so you just go into your car, you know. But or insert random drug here, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I don't have that anymore, you know. And I feel like I used to listen to a lot more music because of that, because you're sort of chained to your, you have to be in the car, so you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
It's different. Music listening habits change over time.
That's
obviously
true.
But yeah, it makes me wonder what I'm missing.
Well, for me, it's work too, because I have like 2 hours of like 2-3 hours of prep time, whatever, to open up the establishment, and I just fucking listen to everything I want and need to listen to. Yeah. One to get me going, one to change my mind, and the third one to just like seal the deal. It's like, you know, I go through stages of different types of music that I listen to, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah, music informs your history and your present, for that matter, I guess.
Yeah. Shit, I'm gonna go see New Order on tomorrow.
That's right.
First time ever.
Where is that at?
Greek Theater.
Oh, okay. Oakland? Yeah.
Yeah. No, Berkeley.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
It's gonna be, they've been on my bucket list for a long time. I've never seen them.
That should be good. Do they have like a new album, or?
I don't know what the purpose of touring is. They're touring, yeah.
It's a full tour?
Yeah, I don't think they've ever stopped touring. Hmm. Maybe in the mid-90s.
Really?
It's a, well, you know, New Order's story. I mean, Ian Curtis, lead singer, or frontman, lead singer of Joy Division, killed himself, 78?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no, and I did not know that.
Just before their American tour. And then they got notoriety and, like, cult, you know, following kind of status. And then New Order came out of the ashes of that. And they've been touring and playing ever since, putting out album after album.
What are some highlights from New Order?
Blue Monday.
Yeah.
It's their number one hit. It's right. The one song to hit the biggest, but they didn't make any money off of it,
mm-hmm.
Which is hilarious.
But that band Orgy did in about 10 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like lipstick goth. Blue-haired lipstick goth. That's really funny that you mentioned that. Yeah, is this the original? Please don't play Orgies.
I'm not playing Orgy.
That's it's amazing. I mean, Joy Division was punk, like dark, like original emo shit, and dreary and fucking moody and medicated, and so that fizzles off, and in comes New Order with this 80s pop, higher BPMs, you know, more of a positive sound. Still, the lyrics are dark, you know, they're kind of twisted, but I mean, you can dance to it, you can move to it, you can sweat to it. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's almost like night and day, but they still, like, it was like, oh, okay, the band goes on. You know,
this is what year is this?
This would be 80. I want to say 80, 81.
Movement came out in 81. Mm. What album is this on?
It's their premiere album.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's a. I think it came out as a single. It was an EP.
So are you gonna like grease your hair back or no, wear a hat? What are you gonna do?
Wear all black.
A tie-dye suit.
Probably not gonna shower.
Not gonna. Right. Okay, yeah. Greasy. Yeah. 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 You gotta get that greasy hair going.
I'm excited. I mean, my little brother hit me up one day and he was like, "Hey, man, would you go see Radiohead at the Berklee Theater or New Order at the Berklee Theater?" And I was like, I've seen Radiohead, and if I see Radiohead at the Greek, it's just going to be a shit show. I already know it. It's going to be dumb kids trying to be like hip and alternative, smoking too much, drinking too much. It's going to be a shit show. I know how the Berklee works, the Greek theater. And I was like, in New Order, I've never seen, and I've always wanted to see them, and I think their crowd's going to be a little more adult, so it's probably more comfortable.
Most definitely.
You can enjoy the music more, so more about the music instead of the scene.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Oh, okay, because I got you tickets for New Order." I was like, dude, I was like, "Shut the fuck up! I'm gonna check them off my fucking bucket list tomorrow. They're on my music bucket list for sure."
That's cool, yeah. So, but it's not the full band. How many original members do you know?
It should be a few of them.
Yeah,
yeah. It's not a very heavily rotated band, like a lot of other bands where it's like fucking Genesis.
You know, who's who's opening for them?
I have no idea. I like to just show up early, enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to have any preconceived notions as to how the show is going to go. That's the thing about music. Sure, you got to go for the ride.
You sure it's not placebo?
If it's placebo, shit. I've never seen placebo. I mean, I don't hate them that much. It's just that it comes with a certain stigma.
It's a good band. It's the lead singer's got like that whiny voice.
Well, he's like a vegan, like bisexual kind of dude. I don't know. Typical, right?
I don't have a problem with bisexual, but vegan.
I'm just saying,
he
just falls into the, like, it's him and the lead singer of AFI are like twins. I don't know.
Davey Havoc?
Am I right or am I wrong?
They just played here, actually. Yeah.
I'm never going to see those guys. Yeah.
I'm so funny. I wonder like what they're playing right now. Like, I wonder what kind of music. Do you think, are they still playing the same shit? Like,
they have a catalog.
Do people still listen? Yeah. I mean, that's what I think. Like, Radiohead. Does Radiohead have a new album? Is that why?
I haven't even heard it yet.
They have a new album. Yeah. See, these are the things we're supposed to be informing our listeners, and we know not.
It's a learning process for everyone.
Yeah.
I'll let you know after I see New Order what it's like and what happened.
Yeah.
So shit.
It's gonna be good.
I was talking to our other millennial that was on the show the other day, about goth music. She doesn't know a lot about goth. I mean, she goes to this club called Death Guild that a lot of the young kids go dance at.
Where is that at?
It's over on the DNA Lounge.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's great. It's a great venue.
Mm-hmm.
So I started playing some like other off Bauhaus, off, you know, kind of goth music. And I played her a band called Sisters of Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've heard them. Like, if you've been in like a dive bar, or, like a dark bar in LA, or like there's a lot of like, you know, creepy vampire people running around. You've heard Sisters of Mercy.
The Cat Club also.
Yeah, if you've been to the Cat Club, definitely you've heard Sisters of Mercy. And it was great because, like, it's one of the first records I remember stealing from my older brother. Was Sisters of Mercy. It's called The Flood. And then they had a version of this one song called Lights. And it's good. It's pretty good. But then I heard the off version of it. On an album called Before the Flood, so it must have been a raw, like, old copy, you know?
Hmm.
But it was, like, a re-release.
Yeah.
And I heard the song again, and it's, just, like, my favorite version of the song, and also my favorite song of theirs. It's super dark, like a really dark industrial sound.
Flood. Flood 1, Flood 2.
Yeah. And this album's called Before the Flood. And the song's called Lights. This fucking song's great. It's dark. Like, it's vampy. So vampiric. I mean, even the words dark, this, that, blood, this, and you know, it's a category for sure. But it's great because in the end of the song is my favorite part of the song. When you're in the car, like you said, and all you're just windows are closed, you're in good company, the company likes the music, you're quiet, you're listening to the track.
Right.
And then you start hearing all this shit. Like, they got you into the music. When it's headphone music, when you hear it in your headphones, it's you and your music. Doesn't matter where you're at. Exactly, you're feeling that shit. Mm-hmm. And she was in the car with me, and she's like, what the fuck is this? It's like, Sisters of Mercy. She's like, Sisters of Mercy? That's a fucking great name. You know, she's a millennial. Mm-hmm. Not in a bad way, but you know, she's a little younger than us. And she's never heard this band before. And they hit her just as hard as it hit me when I first heard them when I was... like 10, 11. Yeah, it was an interesting childhood. I was listening to Eastern European fucking really dark electronic music, listening to goth,
but kraut rock.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
Kraut rock.
I guess kind of like a lot of French, German, English rock,
mm-hmm.
and mixed in with like techno and electric. European electronica from fucking early 90s, nothing compares to that. Nothing. And then like I luckily had a brother that was into it too, kind of into it, and he just always bring home random CDs. I'm like, listen to this shit, dude. I'm like, what is this? I can't even read the fucking label. I didn't even know what band it was. And it just had weird symbols and like it was holographic shit. I'm like, what the fuck? I listen to it. I'm like, it's the greatest fucking music of all time. And, you know. Here, turn it up on the track again because he's about to go ape shit.
He's about to lose it.
He's about to lose it.
Where the emerald blisters
That's let me say a scene up for you. Alright. This is like when I'm fucking it's supposed to be my college years, but I'm not in college.
What?
I have my own car. I'm driving down the road, new date, hot chick. I don't even know what the fuck music she likes. It doesn't fucking matter to me. I'm playing this. My dick's half hard. I've kind of got a buzz. And when we get to the house, we're probably fucking to this. It's like there's no options. There's no choice. It's just it. Yeah. It's heavy. It's heavy. And, you know, worst case scenario, they don't like it. But most of the time, I mean, if you don't like this music, there's something wrong with you. But I will play this for the majority of my friends. They're like, what the fuck? Are you the friends that I've known like 30 years since I was a kid? Yeah. You know what I mean? So preschool to kindergarten, these guys that I've met like early in my life and they're still my friends. I'll play my music. They're like, oh, not headache music. They call it headache music. They're like, oh, yeah. I mean, we like the same music. They like their music and I like their music, you know?
Yeah.
And but I have some shit that I keep to
it's
myself.
It's good to be open. It's good to be open-minded.
Yeah. You know? We're all different, like the people I grew up with since that age.
Yeah.
That's best part. Yeah. It's the most colorful relationships. Different backgrounds, same concepts and ideas.
Yeah, I think different I listened soundtrack. To a lot of weird shit. Compared to most people when I was growing up, but yeah. I recently discovered this Serbian band. Or I don't know. I don't know if it's an artist or a band, like, but it's
pre or post conflict.
Nah, yeah, like maybe mid Cold War. Or no, actually, but Serbia, like Belgrade and all that, like mid-90s was.
So this fucked. Came out of that.
Yeah, man.
So, okay, you need to play this.
But
shit.
They were around from like the '80s, but they're still making music. But so there's this called the Ribja Korba. I don't know how to pronounce that, but it's good shit, man.
I'll play for me. It's live.
Live.
Svanulo je iznad crkve svetog Marka, čistači u žuto ulice su prali, kući su se vukli parovi iz parka. Šta smo mogli, nismo jedno drugom dali. Ali kažete, dobro jutro, Beograde!
Sorry, that might not have been the best example. I just love how everybody knows the words, and you know, they're playing out to like this huge outdoor crowd.
That sounds like Irish music.
I love that guy's voice though. He's got a fucking awesome.
Yet to be a.
Yeah.
This is Ivan Drago, dude.
So good. It's so good. I like spent like a whole night listening to this album like three times. I don't know why it makes me so happy to hear like all these people, like, because you know, man, like they, you know, they went through a lot of shit, like they need this, you know, this is real music, you know,
the turmoil in Eastern Europe,
man, everybody is singing it.
Do you know what he's saying?
I have no idea. This song's called Dobro Jutro.
No, he's playing the dobro.
Well, I know, exactly. Like in English, dobro is, yeah, it's like a slide guitar that you play standing up. But I just love this guy. Like, I feel like I got to learn.
Is Serbian?
Yeah, is that the language? I don't know.
Kosovo? I don't know.
Right.
Same thing, right? Same conflict? No, that's something. Sorry, I don't want to offend anybody.
Bosnia, Herzegovina.
Bosnia,
we're very ignorant about this. But I just like this music anyway. We'll put it in the liner notes in case anybody wants to look this up.
I'm gonna have to look it up. I have to look it up.
This shit, it's so good. But you know, it's coming from a place of real passion. I mean, who's making music during a war? You know, which is why there are like a lot of rock bands like in Iraq,
Civil War, Cold Mountain,
Iran, definitely.
Remember that
Cold
song?
Mountain.
Remember that movie? That was a good movie.
That movie with fucking Renee Zellweger.
That was a great soundtrack. Jack White was on the soundtrack.
I vaguely remember it. I remember he was
I'm gonna play that track.
He was a deserter, and he like ends up traveling through the South or whatever, right? And he just just meets a bunch of chicks Nicole Kidman, and it's
no, that's his like his fiance.
It's what's his name?
Jude Law.
The young Pope.
Yeah. I don't watch it. I stopped watching that show because it's too dark.
It's fucking amazing.
That show's way too dark.
Incredible. I love that show. The show's seriously amazing. But
I gotta play the Cold Mountain soundtrack.
There's actually some pretty rad Italian music on that show, but the Cold Mountain soundtrack? Are you gonna play Jack White right now? Is that what's
No, happening? I'm gonna play the original band.
What band?
Well, it's a bunch of dudes. It's like a bunch of fucking like Appalachian Mountain kind of dudes. Okay, let me play it, dude.
Do it. What you got?
You're gonna like it. I wish I wish. Wartime music. My baby was born and sitting on its papa's knee, and me poor girl, were dead and gone, and the green grass growing over my feet. I ain't a head, nor never will be, till a sweet apple grows on a sour apple tree. But still I hope, the time will come when you and I be as
we will take a quick break. We will be back in just a moment.
I wish my love had died and sent his soul to wander free. Then we might meet. Let our poor bodies rest in peace. The owl is a lonely bird. It chills my heart with dread and terror that someone's blood someone's blood there on its feathers.
We are back. And Henrietta Ali Chukwuma. It's a Nigerian.
Nigerian.
Yeah.
I was going to say it sounds like Fela Kuti.
Ooh, yeah.
Less political.
Yeah, and yeah, maybe a little happier.
A little happier,
but,
yeah.
you can't not shake it to Fela, but this is a particular kind of rock from like the 70s called like Juju.
Juju?
J-U-J-U. Afro-funk, whatever.
Yeah, Afro-funk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I like it because they use a lot of sort of the pedal steels that we were talking about last mm-hmm. time, actually, which is kind of rare nowadays. Just a really kind of, you know, it's a very almost South American sort of. I think, I don't know, maybe when
Caribbean?
Yeah. I mean, it's not, but it, you know, it kind of has like.
Well, that's where the roots come from.
Repetitive.
Like oh, right, they say, yeah, a lot of music comes from roots of different places, like Bahia, like when the slaves came over, mm-hmm. they stopped in the Caribbean and they stopped in Brazil ports. You know, they picked up all the flavors from around the world and mixed it in with a little African culture, mm-hmm. and you got yourself a fucking melting pot of beautiful shit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, believe it or not, I can sing in Portuguese to certain types of music. I can play Brazilian instruments, traditional instruments, berimbau, atabaque.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Well, I was not prepared tambor. For that. I'm gonna bring these next time.
Good luck finding a berimbau, dude. But I learned how to play these instruments in capoeira class, Brazilian martial arts class, and I was in there for years. And a part of the thing is you don't just fight and learn how to like dance around. You learn how to sing and you learn how to play instruments. It's you have to do the whole thing. So for a few years, I was learning how to do that. So, I mean, I'm not the best at it, but I can hold a tune with the rest of the class.
Are we going to have a live show next time?
Yeah, we should have a live show. But it has African roots, and it sounds a lot like this, so. But less of a party. But yeah, no, Fela Kuti. I mean, I've seen his son live at Stern Grove Festival. Yeah. Femi Kuti.
Yeah, Femi Kuti. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's awesome. I remember that. I didn't go...
I was really high. I'm always high at Stern Grove. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's Stern Grove. It's free, everybody. You know, I went last year to see George Clinton in Parliament. Dude, Stern Grove is... Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just watched them on PCU.
By the way, that show was fucking amazing. But, dude, like, it's so packed now. I mean, that's just how it is. That's how Harley Strictly is now, too. It's just... I mean, like...
Early.
Dude, Harley Strictly is insane. I would not be surprised if there were 800,000 people there. Like, it was...
Yeah.
It was terrifying.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. But Stern Grove's obviously much smaller. But yeah, I mean,
not just smaller, it's just
it's super packed.
It's insane.
And we literally had to climb like that dirt hill and just like sort of sit on a tree stump. And but you know, it's cool. Everybody brings
the millionaires that live in the surrounding neighborhood fucking hate that.
Oh, they hate
that
shit. They hate it.
It's funny.
Well, now it's just everybody comes out, man. Stern Grove used to be somewhat kind of peaceful. You didn't have to get there at 6 in the morning, but now it's... Man, yeah, it's insane. But either way, that show was still... It sounded great.
You know what they need to solve that problem is what is it called? Simultaneous events to delude the crowd, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have two major festivals, two different parks, same time.
Well, that's the thing. Which one are you going to? They need two... free festivals at the same time.
Exactly.
Because, yeah, those free ones are just now. It's done now. I think it's over. Like, it's impossible.
I meet people at these festivals when I do have energy to go that are coming in from way out of town. They're flying in.
Right.
They're road tripping in. Mm-hmm. It's like, what the fuck?
Scene. This is the exact experience I had last year. I went to Harley Strictly and it started out great and then it just, by like 1:32 p.m. it was hell. It ended up just being a nightmare.
Yeah.
It was horrible. Like you couldn't. It was just awful. Like I got to see acoustic Yola Tango, which was cool.
That's good.
I got to see Chris Christopherson, which was fucking amazing.
I saw Cake, which is fucking great. But
going the distance.
The crowd was going so big. I couldn't even see the stage. It was all tallies.
Yeah. No, I know. And that's the thing, you know. I hate missing Emmylou. Emmylou closes Harley Strictly.
Every year?
Every year. at the banjo stage.
I haven't seen Emmy Lou in a long time. God,
she's still hotter than
she's
ever.
Gorgeous. Last time I saw her was at Wavy Gravy's birthday at Berklee Community Center, singing with what's the one folk chick that made Bob Dylan famous?
Joan Baez.
Was it Joan Baez?
Joan Baez, yeah. I mean,
Joan Baez. Joan Baez and Emmy Lou.
They made each other famous. Let's
no, she made him famous.
Come on.
She introduced him to the real scene.
Yeah, but he immediately eschewed that scene as soon as he
got a little... Then he became, like, the daddy on the scene. I know.
Well, story. Yeah, I mean, no.
She took the back seat. Anyways.
Yes and no.
I prefer Joan Baez.
I prefer Buffy St. Marie, but if we're going to go down that road, that's a little different.
But Emmy Lou Harris is a silver-haired goddess.
Emmy Lou is, that's it. That's, shit. I would drop everything, like, today.
Yeah. And what is she, like, 70?
Nah, not yet. She was always younger. Yeah. Oh, no, she's definitely in her, like, mid-upper 60s, sure. Yeah. But she's fucking gorgeous, dude. She's incredible.
Fuck.
She still has that voice of an angel.
Oh, God.
I mean, I know you're listening.
Yeah.
I know you're listening.
Let me put it in perspective for you. It's because of her Graham Parsons is dead.
Fuck you.
She ruined him.
Fuck off.
She ruined him. No. So if you're willing to die.
I mean, it's entirely, she would ruin me.
Yeah.
I'd be dead in a year. Yeah. But no, Graham Parsons had a lot of other shit going on.
I'm going to give you an option. Emmy Lou Harris or Fiona Apple?
Emmy Lou. Except for that, I can maybe plant a seed in Fiona.
Oh, shit.
I apologize.
That just got raw. That got raw, literally.
You can't. It's not figuratively. It's Emmy. It's always Emmy, man. And that's it for me. Yeah. That's it. That's it.
It's your golden lamb on the mountaintop, dude. It's time to sacrifice.
Oh, I would part a sea for her, to say the least.
Well, I mean, she's country rock, country. But Joan Baez is folk. Yeah. And what we were listening to earlier when we outroed out. Mm-hmm. Would be Appalachian style bluegrass folk,
right?
Kind of.
Did they have a name? That
no, it's
the
just
band?
A bunch of dudes.
I mean, just
it's
a like, bunch.
It's,
of
so
dudes.
It's three good old boys from Appalachian Mountains, just singing a song.
I mean, I get it, but they got to have a group name.
No, it's Tim Erickson, Riley Baugus, and Tim O'Brien.
That's it. Like that's
it's four dudes and then O'Reilly something else.
Erickson, Bagus, O'Brien. That's
just yeah, it's just three or four dudes and they're just fucking playing, you know, shit that you would hear in Appalachias.
I like it.
It's good.
That's good. That's good stuff.
I was drunk one time on moonshine. You know,
White
respectively.
Lightning. Yeah. From where? Where'd you get moonshine?
It was a random jar. I don't think it was a BevMo jar.
Well, no, I don't think
it was some random jar.
Although, actually, now,
no, they do. That's where I
now
get
they
White
do have
from.
Like White Dog and shit now. Yeah, yeah. That's true.
But
which is awful, by the way. It's
I got
terrible.
Really wasted on moonshine and was watching Cold Mountain and then listening to this music for like days. I was on a buzz for like days, listening to that kind of music. Oh, I got to sink into that rabbit hole because it's Americana.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Shit, you can picture a dude playing a washboard.
Yeah.
He's playing a saw. And then, you know, now you have other bands that are just as dark and just as, like, folky. Black Heart Procession. Oh, yeah. You haven't even heard that album yet, have you?
Yeah, we listened to it last time, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. But
no, I'm saying, like, you should listen to the whole album.
I did. I do my homework after the show. I prepare myself after the show's over. That's
you can refer back.
Yeah, I'm the last person who should be hosting a podcast, but it's okay.
You know what I wanted to touch on, which I think evolved out of like Joy Division and Bauhaus and all these darker, moody bands is a genre, late 80s, early 90s, people referred to almost insultingly as shoegaze.
Shoegaze.
You've heard of shoegaze?
Explain to me shoegaze.
I think we talked about this, right?
Okay.
Where, you know, literally, like, the music is so dreary and
this
moody
like,
that...
Like, British indie rock from the 80s?
Yeah, I guess the majority of the bands came out of Britain.
Okay.
You're staring at your shoes. It's like that's the visualization.
Like, pre-emo, essentially.
Oh, right? Yeah, this is... No, that's different. It's,
It's about the sound or...
It's the emotion and, the whole scene. It's essentially defining the scene.
A.K.A. neo-psychedelia?
No, there's nothing psychedelic about it. But one of my favorite I guess you would say, bands actually is a female singer, which is rare that, like, one of the best bands on the scene has a female singer, and it's Cocteau Twins.
Mm.
And they have this one song that's it's a perfect song. It's not happy. It's not, you know, it's not... Cause a lot of Cocteau songs have, like, the ethereal sound, and it's kind of angelic, especially because of her voice. This is kind of, like, a little more blunt in your face. Like, you have other thoughts on your brain mm-hmm. besides trying to have a good day. This is Cocteau Twins, my favorite album, Garlands. And the song's called Blind, Dumb, Deaf.
Officially unofficial shoegaze.
That's you.
Shoegaze album.
Should be playing something in the background.
Which is all right. You know, it's not the... It could be a lot worse.
Your computer's playing something.
But My Bloody Valentine falls into this.
Oh,
also.
Yeah. No, My Bloody Valentine's super heavy on the guitar. That's fuck.
Yeah, super noisy. That's good shit.
What is it? What's the fair song? Soft as Snow. Mm-hmm. It's warm in here. What the fuck? Yeah. Oh, fuck.
Well,
we played that at my friend's funeral. That shit's that's real. No, it was good. Great. Yeah. No, this is my good friend of mine, sweetheart girl, name's Caroline. She passed away at a young age, and her sister was like, "Shit, I have her iPod." They played her entire last playlist that she was listening to.
Wow.
At the funeral, it was like the greatest fucking sound. People were getting her iPod and snapping photos of like, like the playlist. It was legit.
Usually people on the brink of suicide do have pretty good musical tastes.
It's probably, you know,
that there might be some corollary there.
Well, I mean, genius comes with madness, so.
Sometimes.
Most of the time.
That's probably true. Yeah. So, Loveless, right? My Bloody Valentine, 91.
Yeah.
That's usually what I think of.
Is it that My Bloody Valentine is more of a hardcore version of this kind of music,
right? Yeah, it's a lot more fuzzy, grungier sort of, but still,
it's distortion
emotionally.
Kind of, it is totally
relevant. Yeah,
totally. I mean, it's I would say it's between Cocteau Twins and Sonic Youth is My Bloody Valentine.
Okay. Right. You know. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That's exactly in the middle for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense.
That shit. I might have to listen to that tonight before I go to bed.
Well, just hide the razors.
No, no, that doesn't really.
Although you do have a bunch of cuts on your wrist right now. I don't know, like I saw that. That's like,
a car accident.
Oh, that's right.
People always ask.
Oh, I walked into a door. Oh,
yeah. It was my fault.
Oh, I thought
I've used that line. That's not that funny.
This is my fault.
You can kind of see there's like a theme going on today with my music.
Yes.
Just get us getting the last winter vibe out.
Mm-hmm.
Before summer starts really get kicking in the high gear.
Yeah, I do like that idea of bringing in foreign instruments and seeing if we can't get a sound out of it, though. I do like that.
I know how to play a didgeridoo.
That's no joke, man. That's just, you need like circular breathing for that.
I don't know how to circular breathe. There's only a few Americans.
Like one note at a time. Yeah. No, I mean, that's no joke.
But Fucking Aborigines.
Yeah, that's literally breathing in through your nose while blowing out through your mouth.
Yeah.
And continuously doing that, which is... I mean, just try to do it right now.
It's virtually impossible.
It seems impossible.
There's a surgical procedure you can get to get that.
What do you get, like a two ribs?
You remove, like, so ribs you do something with the epiglottis.
Just get rid of your nose or something?
You remove your epiglottis, I don't know.
You just, like,
put that's those, a commitment.
Like, oxygen tubes in your nose? I mean, that might work.
That was a beautiful song. Cocteau Twins is no joke.
But, you know, I mean, trumpeters do this too. And, I mean, a lot of horn players, brass players use this too. Like, they'll keep air in their... You know, see, you watch those old videos of Dizzy Gillespie with the huge cheeks, you know? I mean, I don't know if he's necessarily doing that, but a lot of times brass players do that, or even woodwind for that matter, to keep it going if you need to sustain a note. But again, it's not. I mean, it's much easier said than done. Well, I was thinking about weird instruments, and then I was thinking about Sandy Bull. And are you familiar with Sandy Bull? He's an American guy, but he plays... he played guitar, and he played a lot of shit, but he also... plays the oud.
Yeah.
O-U-D. Yeah. I love Sandy Bull. But he also throws on like a lot of like fuzz and tremolo, you know, which is great. From like the 60s. And he's not from SF, but I think he lived here for a while and he played a bunch of shows here. But I was listening to No Deposit, No Return Blues actually today. So
you want to play that for us?
Yeah, I'm going to give Sandy a little shout out here. Emotionally psychedelic day.
I like that. That was very pleasant.
Yeah. Like a lot of his albums only have like two or three songs or tracks, you know, which is great. I think this was only like two.
That's what I'd be playing if I was a bartender in one of what the fuck's his name? The guy that did Dust Till Dawn.
Robert Rodriguez?
No, not the other one.
Tarantino?
If I was a bartender in Tarantino's movie, I'd be playing this at my bar. Side of the road, one customer a day. Passer-ons. That's the scene.
It is very, very moody.
Tarantino-esque.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
He loves like shit.
Link Ray, you know. And Tarantino's a big Link Ray fan, and so a lot of his movies have that. You know, like Rumble, of course.
Mm.
You know, you hear that, and you, a lot of people that aren't really familiar with Link Ray will naturally just think of Tarantino. But yeah, he's, you know, he's got the finger on the pulse. He knows. He knows how to get you going.
His soundtracks have been like, for a lot of people, are like, oh, I listen to other types of music because I like the stuff that I hear on Tarantino's soundtracks. You know what I mean? He introduces a lot of people to what we know as what is really good music. Mm-hmm. And they finally like, oh, right. Like, I like that stuff too because they heard it on a Tarantino movie. So it's like introductory.
He's good. He's a smart guy. In that regard, he's a lot like Martin Scorsese. I'd say that's the only regard he's a lot like Scorsese. But, you know, Scorsese, I think, was sort of famous for the what's referred to as the needle drop, which he did in like Mean Streets,
yeah,
and in all every one of his movies.
Yeah.
Before that, nobody really just played pop songs or popular music; they were just fully scored, thought out, and you know, visualized beforehand, and then just, you know, background music essentially.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Then Scorsese was one of the first, if not maybe, you know, the first to sort of drop in like the Shangri-Las and mm-hmm, you know, just mm-hmm, you know, what we consider oldies now. And yeah, I guess which was kind of old back then, but for the 70s was
it, and now they have two. You go to any, if you go to a fucking record store, like say you go to Amoeba or whatever, you go and they have motion picture soundtrack and the score, so you get both.
I used
to buy both.
Yeah, they have the score and then songs inspired by the motion picture or whatever.
Not all of them are in there.
But yeah.
Like, my case in point, Legend.
Legend?
Tom Cruise, Mia Sara, Tim Curry, Ridley Scott's fantasy movie. About.
Oh, from the 80s.
Yeah, the unicorns.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
I'm
the
thinking
devil.
Like recent. Yeah. Okay.
They have the score, which is done by Tangerine Dream.
Oh, okay.
And they have soundtrack, which you have on like Voice of the 80s.
You have both soundtracks.
I used to. The score and the motion picture soundtrack.
That's awesome.
Roxy Music's fucking what the fuck's, I can't remember his name right now. Lead singer of Roxy Music.
Oh, like, man.
Yeah. So when it comes to film and music, it's just always intertwined. Like I said, this music is a straight pull off of a fucking Tarantino film.
That's awesome. Brian Ferry?
Brian Ferry, okay, the right. Voice of the 80s. Yeah. Lead singer, Roxy Music.
Voice of the 80s?
It's just two people that contend for that.
What about Byrne? Yeah.
No.
Oh.
Like, he doesn't get no love.
Okay.
Him and Brian Eno fall into obscurity.
Well, Eno.
David Byrne and Brian Eno fall into obscurity because they work too much together and they're crazy.
Mm.
So the voice of the 80s, so is two people that people like argue over. It's either Brian Ferry from Roxy Music or Peter Murphy from Bauhaus.
Oh.
Yeah.
What about Peter Gabriel?
Oh, man. Peter Gabriel is shit. Peter Gabriel's a god. He's a little too artistic for most people.
Even now?
Yeah. There's still that, you know, Peter Gabriel or
Phil Collins.
Phil Collins, like, who's the better frontman for Genesis is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
If you're not fucking retarded.
I like Peter Gabriel.
Peter Gabriel, yeah.
Does that make me a bad person?
No, that makes you... That makes you a more acceptable, like...
I like Peter Gabriel.
Hipster.
Yeah. I like his solo stuff more than Peter Gabriel's, definitely.
I like Phil Collins' pop. I love Peter Gabriel's introduction of Genesis and his solo career.
And Phil Collins is, you know, probably a better musician, for whatever that's worth. But I like Peter Gabriel's songs.
Yeah, his fucking... His first album,
I think, that makes
out
me
the
a bad
gates.
Person.
So. Mm-hmm. You fuck... What? Mm-hmm. Dude. Nothing's better than So. So is one of the greatest albums of all time. And it's his first shot solo career, and he kills it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, hits the ground.
He fucking duets with Kate Bush.
That Suicide song? What was that? Yeah.
Don't Give Up.
Don't Give Up, right.
Fuck.
That's hard, man.
Yeah, dude. No, that's one of the greatest duets of all time. What I wanted to play, I wanted to play, this is probably one of my last picks of the day. Another Cure song. This
another
one,
Cure song.
For me, this is their transitionary song. This came off of, shit. I want to say 17 seconds, but I'm not sure. Charlotte Sometimes. Good. I mean, you have the upbeat instruments, but you have the dark lyrics, same voice,
mournful singing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I love The Cure, because they're so versatile. They make you want to dance. They make you happy, and they'll fuck you up. They'll bring you to a darkest place, the pit of that you don't even know. But then you're out dancing, you have a few drinks, and you hear one of their pop songs.
That is like, very yeah.
I'm
dancing
all night.
Yeah, that is kind of a weird...
They're super versatile. That's, I love that
duality
band,
there, yeah. It's like dance the tears away kind of thing. Dance the fuck the pain away. Dance the pain away.
Peaches over here?
Peaches.
No, it's great. It's fucking... I mean, even showmanship, he's just... He loves music. His life is just music.
Yeah.
Music. And Robert Smith, the lead singer. It's a fucking amazing fucking lead singer. My name is Robert Smith. I'm the lead singer of The Cure. Yeah. So I was seeing him live. One of the worst fucking venues in the world for big stage is Shoreline Amphitheater. Especially if you're sitting lawn, which I usually do.
Yeah. But you bring like booze.
Yeah, you bring BYOB shit like that.
Yeah.
So I was seeing them play live. And he's on stage. And he's wearing these fucking huge fucking platforms. Shit, leather,
yeah,
everything, zippers, fucking his hair's crazy, lipstick is smeared on his face. The look.
Right.
And he's got his look, he's got his vibe.
Yeah.
And so me and my friend are sitting there in the cold, and we're just fucking like fixated on Robert Smith, and he takes off this double axe. He's got a double guitar. Because he's
got
to play like
he's
this.
Got a double.
I forgot what song
guitar.
It was. It was a complicated song, and he had to play both. He plays lead and rhythm.
Yeah,
and so the lead guitarist, the real lead guitar, the fucking virtuoso in the band, takes off his guitar, puts it over Robert Smith, and is showing him. So Robert Smith essentially is learning the song's lead insert through the lead guitarist. And he's showing like like that, and he's like, oh okay, he got it. Then he plays it, and he plays it for the rest of the song while singing the fucking song. That's fucking Robert Smith. Who does that live in front of thousands of people?
He physically gave him his guitar.
He gave him the guitar.
So now he had three guitars.
No. He took off the double axe.
Okay, got it.
Gave him his guitar.
Trio, yeah.
And he played the lead. I can't remember the music. I was fucking.
Yeah,
I started crying, bro.
Right.
That was intense. I started making out with my friend because I was that intense. And but he's playing this fucking complicated. I guess he probably knew it, but the guy reminded him how to start it, and then the song goes, and he goes with it the whole way. And I'm like, fuck.
That's good.
It's Robert Smith, dude. Full leather platforms, hair spiked out, white face makeup smeared across the face with lipstick.
It's just covered in sweat also, of course.
I don't know. Right, I'm fucking far away.
Right, yeah. No, that's funny because you're right about that venue, but some of the most transcended experiences I've ever had watching or hearing music was there. Like, that's the first time I saw Neil, of course. Yeah, that's the only place I've ever seen Neil.
Yeah.
4, 5, 6 times at least. But, you know, it's the only time I ever saw Brian Wilson. The only time I ever saw Tom
Waits.
Brian
Wilson.
Yeah, dude. Tom Waits, Kronos Quartet. I mean, Jesus Christ. And then this last year, I got to see Willie, man.
Willie Nelson?
Dude, yeah. That was...
Or Will Smith.
not Big Willie.
Not, oh, okay. Okay. No, Semi Willie.
Old
Willie.
Original Willie, okay.
The original
O-dub.
Willie.
No, that was incredible. I was losing my mind. It was like a perfect day to see Willie.
I saw Bjork there, dude.
You saw Bjork at Shoreline?
Yeah, she fucking killed it.
Bjork just by herself, like with her band?
Yeah, the full band. She was the headliner.
See, that venue's weird, man. But they get a lot of good acts.
Seen Modest Mouse there.
Yeah, see, I don't. It's
The Cure. Yeah. I've seen big names, like huge names.
They get good shows.
Saw POD, Jimmy World. I saw Band of Horses, Sprung Monkey, LCD Sound. I've been to so many concerts there.
POD.
I've been to a lot of festivals.
I completely. I
well, they were part
did,
of. A
I didn't
festival.
Hear anything you said after POD.
They were part of a festival. What else did I see there? Shit, dude.
You went to like a Christian rock festival?
Or? No, no. It was at a Not So Silent, whatever. I don't know what the fuck. It's like some BFD.
Not So Silent Night?
Something. Oh, it was Live 105 shit. All
right. I can't. You know what? I got to play a little Willie now.
One of these days.
Just like wash that taste out of my brain because I didn't even want to hear that. That's really. And then Creed, you saw right after.
I have a Creed shirt. I wear it as a gag. It's fucking awesome. People are like, are you wearing a Creed shirt? It's like, I'm wearing a Creed shirt, motherfucker.
Alright, Willie's gonna save us right here, I think. Please, Willie.
I'm getting direct messages. What's the name of your podcast?
But by the way, this is the more popular Willie Nelson song, but it's also one of the more mournful songs that for some reason it's always in my head. So please, Willie, save us.
Be that way. You're supposed to know that I love you, but it don't matter anyway. If I can't be there to control you, and like the other little children, you're gonna dream a dream or two, but be careful what you're dreaming. Soon your dreams will be dreaming you. It's not supposed to be that way. You're supposed to know that I love you, but it don't matter anyway. If I can't be there to console you, when you go out to play this evening, play with fireflies till they're gone, and then rush to meet your lover, play with real fire until the dawn. But it's not supposed to be that way. You're supposed to know that I love you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, you're fucking me up,
but
dude.
It don't matter.
Don't Fuck Me Up.
Such a simple song, man. But yeah. It's so fucking powerful. So good. This is from Phases and Stages, which is it's my favorite Willie album. It's not operatic, but it's the album is set up where it's kind of all one song, you know, from beginning to the end.
Yeah.
And he has different variations on stages and phases, and it's just so fucking good. It's such a good album.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's underrated, if it's just, I don't hear about people ever talking about
it.
So I'm assuming it's underrated.
It's a well-kept secret.
But yeah, let's just say it's a well-kept secret. And if you're listening to this and you, where, like, how do I get into Willie Nelson? Because, you know, everybody has, like, a Willie Nelson ideal. Like, oh, he's that guy with long hair, or he's the guy that smokes a lot of weed, or whatever,
hippie,
right?
Yeah. Yeah,
but no, I mean...
He's a guy that played a song to get out of trouble.
Caught
by a sheriff.
Willie famously... he was more of, like, a songwriter.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's from Texas, but then he moved to Nashville, and he made a living meagerly as a songwriter, and he never really sang or performed, you know? And when you look at old pictures of him, he's super like short crew cut kind of thing, and you know, he's like a normal dude looking. He's not like what he is now, but then and he sold music, but he never really became like a name, you know. And he famously sold the song Crazy, which Patsy Cline made famous, scores of other people made famous for $5
Seal.
Just sold it for $5, just like on like a handshake, basically. You know,
the one that Seal covered.
Let's get to see.
That just fucking me.
No.
It's a Willie Nelson song.
But you know, but then and then he moved back to Texas after a while, like in the '70s, like early mid seventies, and then just said fuck it, grew out his hair, started playing music he liked, and the rest is history, man. And this album, oh man, this shit gets me going, man.
Yeah,
this shit gets you going. It's so emotional, and it's, you know, I think it ties into the shoegaze a bit in the sense
it does. It's all related.
The lyrics are just unreal. You know, the music is, you've kind of heard it before, but he makes it his own kind of thing. And that's sort of a lot like what we were listening to earlier. You know, yeah, you're using five chords, but it's how you use them that
exactly
makes a difference. You know,
yeah. He opens up his fold of the universe, gives you a peek, and tells you to politely leave.
Yeah, or slash your wrists.
Yeah. Oh shit, dude.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Well, we got to make a promise. We're gonna have an upbeat episode. Like throw in some dance music, some hip hop, something, because we get really fucking dreary and droll.
Is that just what happens organically though?
It does.
I'm not like we should be planning these out. I apologize if this sounds like we're just always going off the rails.
That's my preferred, you know, modus operandi.
Well, that's what we got here. So yeah. You know,
it's ex machina, right?
Take
there.
It or leave it. You know, but that's pretty much how it is. Yeah, we don't really ever have a vision. We probably should, and I apologize to all the listeners out there thinking like, what the fuck is going
I'm
on?
I'm sorry, and
like, what are these guys?
What you originally
about?
Say? I'm sorry, and you're welcome. That was the original quote, episode one.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Do you have anything else up your sleeve?
Yeah, I mean, of course. You know, just the fact that, look, if you get me down like that country rock road, that's all I'm gonna go. So, but I don't want to bore the people out there.
No.
Well, you did touch on Bjork earlier, and
I did.
I just want to make sure everybody is familiar with the Sugar Cubes.
Yeah. So Bjork, when she was a teenager, let me give you the scenario. This is why I loved Sugar Cube so much. It's very sentimental for me. My dad was a big influence for me on music, even though he was kind of a weirdo, kind of like everyone in my family. And he was a big fan of a, you know, live skit show called, you might know it, Saturday Night Live.
Of course.
And one night he wakes me up. He's like, well, Jose, come here, I want to show you something. I'm like, what's up? What? I'm like a little kid, it's late. And he pulls me out into the living room, and on TV I see Matthew Broderick. I know Matthew Broderick because I watched him on TV.
He's War Games
War Games and Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Right.
And he's introducing. He's like, and now the Sugar Cubes, and I'm like, the what? And I see this young lady, a big band dude playing Trump. It's like a bunch of weirdos on stage.
Right.
I'm like, oh shit, this is my shit. And they start playing the my favorite song of theirs, Birthday.
Okay.
So, lay it on us. I love this fucking song. It gets me every time.
Dad introduced this to you.
Yeah.
That's pretty rad.
The thing is, that memory didn't hit me until later when my brother started talking about he came home one night like a fucking alley cat let in from the fucking streets.
Your dad or your brother?
My brother. Okay. Came in soaking wet. Mm-hmm. I was about 8 years old, and he was 15. Mm. And he had ripped. He got chased by the cops because he had ripped a street sign, one of those album posters off a fucking side of a building, rolled it up and ran away. It was Bjork's debut album.
No way.
Yeah, so that's the Bjork in the cardigan or that big sweater like that. Yeah. And I'm like, what is that? He's like, it's Bjork. I'm like, Bjork. It's like, she looks familiar. And so I made the connection later when I heard her voice that was like a year earlier. I heard the Sugar Cubes on Saturday Night Live, and that whole memory came flooding back. So that since like I was 8-9 years old, Bjork's been a fucking, you know, she's just been like a fucking pillar in my life. And my brother was obsessed.
This almost mythical figure.
Obsessed. Yeah, she's a goddess. She's crazy, and I know it. But she is essentially what I think all women should be.
But in the best way possible, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. She's full expression.
That
fine
line that you were talking about earlier between genius and insanity. Right.
Yeah. She is non-apologetic. She just is who she is.
No, yeah, exactly.
She doesn't need to apologize
to
me.
Yeah.
But no, my brother was obsessed with her. My dad liked the Sugar Cubes. He was a major 80s pop guy. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, she was young, man. She was young. Like, she was 17?
No, less. She was
like 16. Yeah.
Less. She was 14, 15, I think, when she joined this. When they,
like 88, 89.
I think it was the Sugar Cubes, then the Sugar Cubes with Bjork, and then she became Bjork.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
So... And that's where she met Matthew Barney.
Oof. man.
Yeah, that
was the ultimate power couple. They're not together anymore.
No, I think I saw Matthew Barney on stage with Bjork at the Shoreline.
What?
He was on there doing some artistic.
He was
artistically drawing the music.
Well, he probably had some sort of
multimedia
visual
instrument.
Right.
Yeah, he was doing visual aid.
Yeah, he's an incredible visual artist.
Yeah.
I mean, so he had an exhibit at the SF MoMA.
Before they closed. That was the last exhibit I saw.
I saw
the film about whaling.
Dude, drawing restraint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About whaling.
No, I mean, it's not about whaling.
Well, they were cutting off meat from each other.
But then they're also like the Japanese gift wrappers, and it's very, you know.
Super obscure. Very amazing. Yeah, it was amazing. I saw it, and I was like, fuck. And I was drunk.
Oh, no, wait. Was that Cree? Yeah, Drawing Restraint, right?
I'm pretty sure.
Not Cree Master. Right.
No, it was Drawing Restraint.
Yeah. So good. Dude, yeah. Matthew Barney's on another level.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like they were kind of made for each other, but at the same time, I think maybe... They can't be held down by anything or anybody.
Even each other.
Yeah.
Fuck what the kids have to say.
Fuck the kids.
fuck, dude. That song gets me, like, on many levels.
It's so good. I haven't listened to that in so long.
I play it every Sunday morning while I'm opening the bar. I'd say that it's religion. It's ritual.
Maybe I should start doing that.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it's so funny. So the owner comes in. And I'm playing, like, Otis Redding, and I'm playing all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes in, he's like, good music, dude. I'm like, yeah, he's fucking, we work with mostly Mexicans. I'm like, the Mexicans love when I play DJ Saturday, Sunday. And one of our busters, like, he's setting up, and he's dancing to fucking, like, some fucking Wilson Pickett, you know? And nice. I think, oh, you think that's good? The dishwasher, who's 19, was asking me questions about George Harrison the other day.
Really?
And I'm like...
Mexicans love the Beatles.
Yeah, dude.
The Beatles are... Yeah.
Yeah, but he specifically asked for George Harrison. He's only 19.
Fuck yeah. I like that kid.
And I'm like, yeah, dude.
I don't know who that is.
I'm setting up a playlist for him. And I told the owner, I was like, that's fucking great.
That's good
shit. It's like, keep teaching him.
That's amazing.
Because to them, it's new music.
Yeah, I knew that because my friend Luis in high school, his parents had like 7 or 8 Beatles albums.
Oh, yeah.
But they were all... But they
were all kitschy pop.
But they were all in Spanish.
Their album covers and their version.
They would re-record them in Spanish. You know, it's brilliant. It's a brilliant idea.
One of the biggest collectibles right now is South and Central American Beatles original prints.
Dude.
Yeah,
I believe it. I got to go hit up Luis right now.
Yeah, dude. Fuck.
Shit.
Well, right. We'll have a whole episode dedicated to the Beatles because that's just...
Well,
that's unnecessary. That's it's a rite of passage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we have to do a little more upbeat hip hop, like you were saying.
Yeah, we'll get over this dreary phase.
Yeah, but pardon me. On that note, I'm gonna let Roland S. Howard play us out just because.
Yes.
Let's just keep it a little dreary.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. This is Shut Me Down.
Good night.
Live and Unlive from San Francisco, California. This is Ignatius Palafox
with the Low Spark
signing off.
Well, so long, baby. I've had enough. I can't ignore it. I miss you so much. I miss you so much. I miss you so much. I'm standing in a suit as ragged as my nerves, and I agree what I've become is is surely worth the hatred that you spent on me. The stars above me, the night so deep that I could trip or drown, and still I see that you would dearly love to shut me down. So I'm a soldier, wet deep in Dutch. I can't ignore it. I miss you so much. I miss you so much. I miss you so. I'm standing in a suit as ragged as my. Is surely worth the hatred that you spent on me. The sky above me, the night so deep that I could trip and drown, and still I see that you would dearly love to shut me down. I miss you so much. I miss you so much.